Hi, this is Iris Jackson, and this is Miracles Happen, Dreams Do Come True. And we have a wonderful, special, precious treat for you today that the beloved, wonderful John Randolph Price, best-selling author, motivational speaker extraordinaire, co-founder of the wonderful Cordis Foundation and World Healing Day with his beloved wife, Jan, and so many other things I just can't say in words. Welcome, John.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you again, Iris.
And it's a pleasure to have you. And we're doing a series on prosperity. And how? And you are the best-selling author of the Abundance book, which I have done the lessons 3 times.
Good.
Yeah. And I feel like at one time I was doing one of the lessons. I was doing the meditation, and at that, I tell you, I've struggled with money more than anything else, probably. In my life, and I was doing that meditation. It was in about 1987, I think, and all of a sudden, in my room, I actually saw little green and gold sparkles raining down until it filled up the whole room. And since then, my experience with money and prosperity has been entirely different. So,
what happened was the creative energy, the substance, made itself visible for you to lift you up into a higher state of consciousness so that you could appreciate and enjoy all the good things in life, particularly money.
Yes, that is the truth. That is the truth.
Sometimes we forget that money is a spiritual idea. And that money is really love made visible.
Wow. That's a mouthful. Well, John, what is your definition of prosperity? I know there's a lot of definitions of it. I wanted to hear yours.
Well, I like the term full measure. When we talk about prosperity or abundance, we're talking about the full measure of life, which includes not only financial independence, but it also includes a radiant, healthy body, loving relationships, and beautiful, creative self-expression, your way of contributing to this world. And to me, that's what prosperity is all about. It goes into that four square: abundance, loving relationships, radiant health, and creative self-expression. Those are the primary gifts of God, and when we understand that and get in tune with our source, then amazing things can happen in and through us.
Well, talk about that more, getting in tune with our source. How can people do that?
Well, in the September Cordis Report, which you may remember, I wrote an article called What Kind of an Impression Are You Making? And I wasn't talking about how we are perceived by others. I was referring to how we are impressing that creative energy, that creative mind, the divine substance, which you have seen, of your energy field. And for years in books and in Cordis Reports, I've written about the creative intelligence that picks up every thought and emotion and creates a corresponding effect in the external world. You know, Emerson said we are what we think about all day long. And when we are thinking in tune with our source, then what we impress is expressed. What we impress within is expressed outward. That's cause and effect. It's also the law of attraction. And the attraction is based solely on the imprint consciousness is making on that creative energy. When we are in tune with our source, in tune with that holy self and the radiating power, the radiating energy, we are imprinting consciousness. We're imprinting what we're holding in consciousness. Now, if it's fear, if it's dread, if it's guilt, if it's emptiness and other negative thought forms, we're going to draw similar or equivalent conditions into our life. But when we stamp that which is joyous and fulfilling on that universal energy, that's what we receive and form and experience. And you know, I ask, how much time do we devote daily to being in tune with that source within us, that omnipotent, omniscient, right there where we are, that holy self, that Christ within, that Holy Spirit, whatever we want to call it, it's there. And when we are in tune with it, then we become the open channels through which it flows into ideal manifestation. But again, we have a part to play in this. What are we feeling? What are we thinking about? How much time are we spending? I have people tell me, well, I've read your book. But I said, have you studied it? Have you taken it line by line, paragraph by paragraph, and gone through to where you deeply feel the impression that the words are making upon you? How much time do you spend in meditation each day? I ask people this all the time. And they say, well, when I get up in the mornings, I spend a little time. I say, a little time. It won't work. It doesn't work that way. We just completed a mystery school where we wove the creative and consciousness threads together in a new version of the law of manifestation. And the code word was source. And every few minutes, someone would say, source. And everybody would immediately go back into that attunement process of getting in tune with that majesty, that miracle-working power within us. And as long as we can stay in tune with Source and do whatever we have to do. You know, I wrote about this one time. The ancients many times would put marbles in their mouth to remind them of the creative power within them. And to me, my consciousness would move to the marbles instead of the Source. And in another illustration I read about, they would hang these very heavy necklaces around their neck to remind them of their divinity. Well, I would be so uncomfortable thinking about those necklaces that I would forget about my divinity. But we have to do what we have to do in order to be in tune with that infinite process.
What you said something in regard to the mystery school about keying into an attunement process. And is that attunement process meditation, or is there
well,
something?
Well, it begins with meditation, but we have to have either a reflex action, a code word, a feeling, something that we can, you know, snap our fingers and we immediately go into that presence within, move into the light. And our code word for that mystery school was Source. And every time, and we had explained early on, that when that word was spoken, that they would immediately turn within, go within into the light, feel the light, see the light, stay in the light until they felt it throughout their physical system and knew that it was radiating through them as a shining sun. And after we did that, you know, it was a four-day process, and after, you know, the second or third day, it became automatic, so that they automatically were in tune with their source, and they became the instruments. Each one of us became the instruments, the channel through which Spirit was expressing as the form or the experience.
After 4 days, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, John.
That's okay.
Go ahead.
Well, it all gets back to how we use our minds. It gets back to our attitudes about life, about God, about this world, about ourselves. And, you know, speaking of of prosperity, there is no scarcity. There is no lack. There is no limitation in this universe. There's nothing. There is only abundance. And our true nature, our spirit, is pure, unlimited, lavish abundance. And this energy of abundance is eternally flowing out, radiating through us to appear as money and every good thing. But we have a vital role to play in this. It's part of the natural process. It's been taught for centuries that the natural process of life is to be rich.
Woohoo!
We came into manifestation, I mean into incarnation, came into these lives to be rich.
This I believe that, John.
The primary axiom of spirit, abundance, richness, affluence. It was all there. It's been there from the very beginning. But we let our minds wander off into that sense of lack, sense of need, and every time we feel a need, what we're doing, we're calling on the universe to multiply our needs, to produce more needs in our life. And this is why I write about and talk about, get rid of the needs. cast them upon that spirit within and go free. Because the more we think about what we want and don't have, then the more the substance creates more for us not to have. And it's, you know, it's the law of cause and effect. As we think, we have. And as we have, we gain more. It's an exciting adventure, Iris. It's just, but we've got to get our heads on straight.
Yeah, we do. You know, you reminded me of a story for me in which I was working with a manifestation teacher and I had all of this debt. I mean, at one time, somebody said to me, if you had all the money in the world, what would you do? And I said, I would pay it on my bills as far as it would go.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It was sort of like that, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I had to have a certain amount of money. You know, money took up so much of my time at that time. And now I'm just free to do what I want and give my gifts and not even hardly think about that.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, I had to have $1,000, and I had to have it quick. And somebody just stepped up and loaned me $500.
Oh, I love the way it works.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I went to my teacher, and I just bitched and bitched about that. I said, all I can do is manifest another debt, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, I still owe this money. And she said, Iris, you nothing belongs to you anyway, and you have been given this $500 to use, and you're not even grateful for it. She said, oh, you're just being given things to use anyway. You know, just lightly, you know, do it like Monopoly money. Move this over here and this over here. And if you have the use of a thing, you have it. So I gave thanks for that $500 that I was halfway there, you know, with what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And that very night, that person that had loaned me the $500 called me up and said, you know what, I just want to give you that money.
Oh.
So that's exactly what you're saying. You know, when you look at what you want and you need, you manifest more need. But when you look at what you're grateful for and you have, it multiplies.
Oh, yes. Gratitude is one of the wonderful ingredients of the whole manifestation process, because when we are grateful, whether we have it or not, we're using the law of attraction in order to bring it to us. So, yes, you were grateful, and look what happened.
Wow, yeah.
You know, people have asked me, they said, one woman said, I've been on the metaphysical path, spiritual path, for over 40 years, and I have never demonstrated money. And she says, what is the reason for this? And my first reaction was to clean up the grime. And, of course, she looked at me and said, grime? What are you talking about? And I said, well, let me use another word. Let's try to see what's going on in your consciousness that has closed the door for the natural process of being rich in this world. So we spent about an hour, and the first thing I said, who haven't you forgiven? And she says, what does that have to do with it?
Everything.
Said, well, number one, you know, unforgiveness holds the door closed, because the more that the definition of unforgiveness is resentment. And I said, the more we resent people, places, situations, conditions, things, the more we are obstructing the natural process of abundance. And so I asked her to make a list of all the people, the situations, and so forth that she had not forgiven. It was quite long. And then we worked to eliminate that by sending love in there and joy and forgiving these people and letting them live their lives, you know, in accordance with their own consciousness, and try not to manipulate them. Because if we try to, if people don't please us sometimes because they're living their own lives, then we may resent them because we think that they don't appreciate us. And it's little things like that that can close the door. And the other thing, you know, is what are you fearful of? You know, fear closes another door. And people say, well, I'm not really fearful. I said, are you concerned about anything? Well, that's different. I said, no, it's not. No, it's not, because if there's any anxiety, any worry, any concern, it's the bottom line of fear. And it can grow into a full blossom if we're not careful. And so I ask people many times, let's make a list of what we're fearful of. I remember I went to a firewalk back in the early 90s, and 26 feet long of burning coals, and a Native American woman worked with us for 2 hours because she said, you will not walk on the fire until you empty out all your fears or you will be burned. And I thought, well, this is kind of silly. How does that relate to the physical system? And she says, what are you afraid of? And I was, my pomposity spoke out and said, I'm not afraid of anything. She says, yes, you are. And she says, dig deep. And I began to voice some of the concerns I had in life about this world and so forth. And others then joined in and expressed their fears. And as I said, a couple of hours later, we were walking around that 26-foot path of coals, and I walked across it and didn't get burned. But she told me later, she said, if you had not gone through that process, you would have been burned. And it made me think of everything in life, from relationships to money to health, all of it. If we are fearful, then we are not protected. But when we can get rid of the fears and cast upon that spirit within to be dissolved and literally be more carefree in life, then what happens is that we get that shield of protection around us for, protecting us from insufficiency, protecting us from illness and other things. And, of course, then the third thing we talked about was discouragement. And when we get discouraged about anything, my advice is to pop up and jump and dance and start singing and run through the house beating on a pan with wooden spoons, doing whatever you have to do to get rid of that discouragement, because what it's doing is screening out that very, very action of spirit, screening out that divine impulse, that grace that is flowing through us at every moment. So we stop being discouraged about things. And then that's the old unworthiness thing. I just don't feel worthy enough to have a fortune in money. Well, then get over that. You've got to start being worthy. You know, you are the self-expression of God. You are God in individual expression. God is being you. Therefore, how in the name of heaven could you possibly think of yourself as being unworthy? You are worthy of everything the universe has for you. And once we can understand this, then another door opens. I gave a talk one time at a church here in Texas, and I asked them if they had looked at their report cards.
No.
I said, what kind of a report card do you feel that the universe is showing to you now? And I said, now make up one. There's an A, B, C, D, and F. You know, A is excellent, and B is good, and C is average, and so forth. And I said, how do you feel your life is? And I had them write it down. Later, a man came to me. We were signing some books, and he said, he had tears in his eyes. He said, my mother had always told me to be an average guy, to never aspire to anything above average, or I would get in trouble. And he said, that's the way I've always lived, the average life. I have an average income and an average home, driving an average car, and married to an average wife. And I said, I hope she's not listening right now. He said, no, she's home. But this whole idea of how we treat ourselves from the worthy standpoint, it's so important, Iris, to realize our worthiness. Well, and then, of course, the other thing that I've talked about, and I mentioned it earlier, is the inability to love unconditionally. Now, people have asked me for years, what is my problem? Now, I usually get down to love is the bottom line. Do you love enough? Because I think I mentioned this to you one time when I was on your show. I had a dream. I was going through a real financial problem. We had just formed Quartus, and my first book hadn't come out yet. And I had sold my business, and we were a little bit out of funds at the time. And I was doing a lot of praying. And I didn't know the line seemed to be closed. There wasn't any playback machine, voicemail. So I had a dream, and this ancient man, very old man, he looked very old in the dream, came to me and put his hand on my shoulder and said, John, if you would only love more, every limitation in your life would vanish. And I woke up and I thought, I love. I'm a loving person. And I realized I was not loving unconditionally, and I wasn't pouring out love. So Jan and I started that very morning on a 7-day adventure in love, with love. We love the floor. We love the ceiling. We love the fridge. We loved the sofa, that we loved our dog. We loved everything. We would pour love out. We would radiate love. We did this until it became a natural thing. We just loved everything. And everyone we would meet, a stranger on the street, we would smile and send love. Well, we had more money come in the next 3 months than had come in the last 3 years.
Woohoo!
It poured in. And, of course, there were things that we were doing. The book came out, and the Super Beings book, and we were invited to do some lectures and workshops, but that love thing was so important. Now, every time over the years that there's been a little bit of dip, you know, financially, I realized I hadn't loved enough, so I started going back and loving more. It's the key. It's the secret. It's everything.
You know, I noticed that with my husband and I used to, only thing we fought about was money.
Mm-hmm.
And we would fight about it when it got really low, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally realized at one point that we kept getting that lesson back because we couldn't love ourselves when that appearance was there. We felt like our report card was an F at that time,
mm-hmm.
and so it's like, don't kiss me, don't hug me, I don't deserve it because
yeah.
of this report card. And
yeah.
and that goes back to the not loving unconditionally that you were saying.
Right.
But
another quick little story. We had a man that came to one of our workshops, and first thing he told me when I introduced myself and you know gave him a hug, he says, "I have to tell you that I don't love anything, and I don't love anybody. And I don't think I've ever felt love in my life, and I know you're going to probably talk about love." I thought, well. Okay, I said, what's the problem? He says, well, how can you love everything when everything has gone to blah, blah? He said, I've lost my job. My wife has run off. My children don't like me. He said, I'm about to lose my house. He said, everything is going to pits. And he said, and you talk about love? So we were outside. We were at Guadalupe River Ranch doing the workshop, and I picked up a rock. And I said, open your hand. And I put the rock in his hand. It was a small rock. And I said, okay. It was a three-day workshop. I said, for 3 days, you're going to love that rock like you've never loved anything in your life. He said, I can't do that. And I said, yes, you can. He said, all you have to do is to feel love and pour it into the thing, into the rock. He said, I can't feel it. I said, start right now. Loving it as if it's your wonderful pet. He said, I don't have any pets. I said, but it's because you haven't loved. Now, love the rock. I'll make a long story short. He began to work with love on that rock. And on the third day, he came to me and he says, I think my heart finally opened. I understand now what a hardened heart is. And he said, because my heart opened and I feel the love. And he said, I love this little rock. And he said, I'm going to always carry it with me. Well, it was about two, three months later, I had a long letter from him. His wife came back. He had a new job making more money than he did before. He bought himself a dog and his children have started liking him. And he just said, thank you for showing me what the power of love is. So, you know, Iris, love is, as I said, it's the key to everything. And when we can love more, we can limit our limitations.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say with my husband and I. I noticed that we kept getting certain lessons back until we passed because we could love ourselves when that thing went on. Then we went on to more good. Boy, I bet you started the pet rock thing.
No, I wish I had.
I think you did. I think that was the official start of it.
Oh, so we still practice that love, and I found that one of my mantras as I'm walking through the house or going across the yard is that I'm a radiating center of divine love. I use that all the time. I am a radiating center of divine love.
I'm writing that down, John.
Yeah.
I am a radiating center of divine love.
And, you know, this gets us back, Iris, to understanding what true prayer is really all about. Many of us grew up in maybe fundamentalist or Jan and I grew up as Baptists.
Yeah, hellfire and brimstone,
yeah,
me too.
Yeah, and there was a lot of that we're here to suffer.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if ask God for what you want, but if he doesn't think it's right, he ain't going to give it to you. And the whole method of prayer was that I'm a sinful being, I've sinned, therefore I'm really not worthy to to accept all the good that I can conceive as a part of my life. So all of us grew up with some of that etched in our consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And as we moved on the spiritual path, we began to understand the whole idea of prayer. It is being aware of that God presence within. It is being aware of that fullness of life, of everything that we could possibly desire is right there within us. Now, in the Abundance book, I'm sure you can remember the first statement is, God is lavish, unfailing abundance, and so forth and so on. And then the second one, I lift up my mind and heart to be aware, to understand, and to know that the divine presence I am is the source and substance of all my good. Now, and then it goes on, you know, for the next several statements, 10 in all. But the whole idea of true prayer is to recognize that we have been given everything.
Already.
That already there is nothing missing in our lives. But we have to be aware of this. We have to understand it and to know it. And, you know, I found something not too long ago in a book that I had written, I can't remember, the late 90s. It was called Living a Life of Joy. And there's a chapter in it called Pay for It and Take What You Want. And I say that, how do we pay? By being consciously aware that whatever we seek is part of the reality of ourself. And by focusing that awareness on self, on that holy self, that divine self within, we do that until the manifestation is complete. And I go on, I say, the best way I found to pay is through contemplative meditation, focusing on the quality of my divine self that I wish to have in a three-dimensional experience.
Ooh, say that again.
If it's to write a particular book, I focus on self as being that book, as being the book, the nature and purpose and the words of the book. And on that beam of awareness, the energy of my divine self as the quality of the book streams forth into my consciousness. And then I've used this and have advised people to use this idea to look within at that holy self, at that divine presence, and say, you are my lavish abundance. And it's not an affirmative prayer. It's a statement of truth. You are my radiant wholeness. You are my creative self-expression. And what happens then is that spirit recognizes itself as your lavish abundance. Now, spirit knows everything in the absolute. But when we, as a part of that divine essence, look within and say, you are my wholeness, you are my financial independence, you are my lavish abundance, then spirit moves from that fourth dimension into the third, into the phenomenal plane, and begins to appear as that which we are saying that it is. Now, it's hard to put this in the words that someone may understand. But
No. I was just thinking you were doing it so eloquently and so concisely. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Because sometimes I get carried away and
you go right ahead,
trying to explain something, and it sometimes doesn't come out right, Iris, but
no,
hopefully everyone got the point.
Yeah. It's good. Keep on going, John.
Well, you know, another secret is this idea of having, and I know you've already brought this up in one respect, but, you know, we can choose and we can say, you are my lavish abundance, and we can affirm that spirit is expressing through us as financial independence and so forth. But until we can sense and feel and know the idea of having it, then it's going to be limited. We can choose and we can accept, but until we register a sense of have from the point of acceptance, then the door is only partially open. And it's an amazing thing, but you know, the Bible, I've got this printed on a card somewhere in my study. It's the idea of having, and it said, he that hath to him shall be given, and he that hath not from him shall be taken even that which he hath. Now, that's tough.
I used to think that was kind of cruel.
Pardon?
I used to think that was kind of cruel, but it's just divine order.
Yeah, it's divine order. It's cause and effect. And, you know, the cause and effect is the basic law of the universe. And our consciousness, we know, is forever expressing itself in the external world. And I have felt that if there is a degree of unfulfillment, it is usually because we are in the fog of not having, and we are striving to get something. And we've simply forgotten the principle of have not. I mean, have now. And I had to work with this because, you know, I developed the 10-step manifestation process. And that sense of have was always a little bit of a bugaboo because I didn't have it in physical form. It wasn't there yet. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, how could I have it if I couldn't see it? And then, you know, through the guidance of spirit, it was like you have it already on the inner plane within. And, you know, whenever you accept something, you do have it, even if you accept what you accept is still in invisible form. And it, to me, that was a real godsend because it helped me to open up and realize that whatever we choose, God will choose for us, or that spirit within. Whatever we choose will be chosen by that spirit to come forth into manifestation. And the only condition, really, is that if we can accept it and feel that sense of having it before the full manifestation takes place. And, you know, it's a wonderful process when we can understand what have really means. And what, number one, what do we really have? We have a divine identity. You know, it's been said that if we can understand and realize who we are, we can give away all the money we have, and it will be replenished triple-fold. And that's from ancient wisdom. And it's if we can understand who we are, that's a part of the have process. You know, we are divine beings. We have all the power of the universe right at our disposal. And whenever we choose something that we feel is good and true and beautiful in life, no matter what it is, a new home, a car, whatever, money, the creative self-expression, whatever it is, if we can choose it and accept it and then feel deeply, deeply within us, feel that sense of have, it's almost like we hear spirit say, okay, you got it. You know, and once we can feel that and know that it is now in the process of being brought into visible form and experience because we have it within, then magical and miraculous things begin to happen in the outer world.
Well, you know what I've grappled with a lot is feeling like God gave me so much. Like, for 42 years, I got to be with my twin flame. And I felt like, you know, what was God thinking giving me that?
Okay.
And so I felt like it drove me along the path, John, but I also felt like, boy, I better earn my wings every day.
Earn your wings every day.
Earn my wings every day. And be all that God intended me to be and not let down for a single minute to deserve the good that I've been given. And I think that comes from that identity problem of thinking that it's something on the outer that makes us deserving instead of that it is our identity. I think it's an identity crisis with most people.
I do too.
That they're not letting themselves have it. You see what I'm saying?
I agree with you. The identity crisis is a good way to put that, because so many of us think of ourselves as strictly a body and a personality.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, oh, yes, the presence of God is within me as the one power and one presence of this universe. But those are just words. Until we can change our identity and really feel that we are the Spirit of God in expression as a personality. And when we do this and realize that Spirit is within us expressing as us, it's called an integrated personality. This is from the ancient wisdom teachings. And when our personality is integrated with spirit, we become literally masters in this world. Not to lord ourselves over anyone, but to be masters within our own personal worlds. To be able to create, to be able to live gloriously and magnificently, and not to take anything away from anyone, and not to rely on anyone, relying only on that spirit within. And when we can live that way, then life becomes a joyful experience each and every day. Now, I'll agree, because Jan and I have bouts of sometimes wake up in the morning around 5 o'clock in the afternoon, a little low spell, and we wondered where the dip came from. But we have looked at this over the last several years and have moved into what we called the arena of non-resistance. Now, you've heard me talk about this before. It's when we resist something, whether it's a condition, a situation, a person, a place, or whatever is happening to it, if we resist it, in other words, we're pressing on it with concern. That's called resistance. And as we move into a non-resistant attitude about it, things seem to lighten up in the outer world, and the good is multiplied and comes back to us, that which we have seen to be missing for a period of time. And we had a young woman, I wrote about this in the course report, that was having some difficulty financially and with a relationship, and we began to work with her on the idea of not caring. And Jen said, I want you to say, I don't care. And she said, I can't say that. And Jan stood up, and we began to walk around the room. And Jan would say, repeat after me, I don't care. And the woman was silent. And I kept saying, I don't care. And Jan would say, I don't care. And I'd point to her. And finally she said, I don't care. Well, we did this for an hour, Iris. And at the end of the hour, she started laughing. She said, oh, my goodness, I don't know what is happening to me, but I feel that the whole oppression has been lifted from me. And we saw her a couple of years later, maybe less than that, and she was making a lot of money in a wonderful new career and had a new boyfriend, and everything seemed to be going. And as she was walking away, she turned around to me and said, I don't care, and smiled. And I thought, okay, whatever it takes to get rid of the gloom, to get rid of the sorrow, and get rid of this idea that we feel guilty and must be punished for something, and, you know, get on with life, the more we can do that, whatever it takes to do it, let's do it. You know, I've had so many experiences to where that, fortunately, I've been with this wonderful woman that I live with, and I mentioned the pots and pans and the wooden spoon, and one time we were working on something, and I can't remember the exact thing, but we had realized that whenever anything breaks down in your house, or in your car, it's because the joy quotient in you has dipped to a red level, emergency level. And that if you will lift up the joy, things begin to be brought back into divine order, because the joy energy and the divine order energy are one and the same. And as we began to talk about this, she went into the kitchen and pulled out a pan and gave me a pan, and she took one and gave me a wooden spoon, and she says, let's march through the house singing while we're hitting our pans with the spoons. I thought, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. I don't want to do this. And she says, come on. So, you know, the dogs ran ahead of us and climbed under the bed. They were scared to death. And we went through the house.
The humans are at it again.
We went through the house banging those pans and singing. Well, guess what? We broke open that seal of the joy juice, so to speak, and we began to feel that joy vibration coming in and through and around us, and things got back into divine order again. So whatever, it goes back to what I said earlier, whatever it takes, do it. But don't sulk and don't sit around. We tell people, don't sit around like a couch potato and worry about your problems. You know, one of the things in the Course in Miracles that I loved was that, Father, help me to understand that this problem has been solved. And the key to this is to recognize is that we don't have any problems, because when the problem first came to our attention, it had been solved. And I wrote about this, you know, the man that was trying to fix our well. We have our own water well. And he told me it was, you know, going to have to dig deeper, going to cost me about $10,000. And I heard the voice within. It says, fret not over a problem that does not exist. And I thought, okay. So I got rid of the fret. and it turned out instead of being $10,000, it was $116,000.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's if, again, we do whatever we do to lighten up and begin to live joyfully and pour that love out, and magical and marvelous things begin to happen, because then we're in tune with that natural process of life.
Well, see, and that's the real prosperity, because it doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank if you're not joyful.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Oh, we've known people that were very, very wealthy, but very unhappy. And it was because, you know, maybe they inherited the money or whatever, but they could not find what they call true place in life. They seemed to be separated from life. They had money, but they had few friends, and they really didn't have a creative expression that they could provide as an opportunity to serve in this world. And they became bored. And you know what happens with boredom. You know, it shuts down all of those chakras and causes a little bit of a problem in life. So, you know, it's another thing to have prosperity with joy, have abundance with love. And, you know, it goes back again to that, the old ageless wisdom teaching is that money is the consolidation of love, that money is created out of love. And in the most recent mystery school, we pointed out that the love that is flowing through us is the law of attraction. That's all it is. The law of attraction is nothing more than the love radiating through you and bringing back to you that which you have chosen in your life. And if it's money, through love, it's going to come back on waves of love. And this is the whole key to life.
And that is when you graduate from a problem, when you can love yourself if it's going on, apparently.
That's right. And, you know, I've told this story. Let me tell it again, because to me, it was a kick in the shins when I first heard it. We were signing books. Jan was signing her book, The Other Side of Death, and I was signing one of the angel books, Angel Energy, I believe. And a young woman walked up with the abundance book that was falling apart and had a rubber band around it, and she wanted me to sign it. And I said, let me get you another one. And she said, oh, no. She said, this one's underlined. It's got all my energy in it. And she said, I'm on day 312. And I got up and walked around and put my arms around her, and I said, don't give up now. And she says, give up? What are you talking about? She says, by the 40th, I can't remember all the sequence of the dates, but on the 40th day, my income was doubled. On the 52nd day, I was given a new car. On the 100th day, I paid off my mortgage. And went on, and my mouth was open. Her story was absolutely incredible. And she said, I'll be a millionaire by the end of the year. She said, thanks for signing my book. And walked away, and I turned to Jan, and I said, get a copy of that book. We're going to start it again tonight. And we did. We started it again. But see, Spirit gives us reminders all through life. If we're slacking off in a certain area, going to make sure the universe is going to bring someone to us that says, here's a story that's going to help you understand that something that you need to do. And it's a wonderful process. You know, Jan will go into meditation or in the mornings and perhaps be asked to be shown a certain thing or a way to do something. And she may be at the grocery store and looking at a head of lettuce, and two women behind her are talking, and they say what Jan has asked to see and know in her meditation. Now, this sounds weird and strange, but this has happened so many times that she knows now that Spirit works through everyone. And if we ask, you know, for an answer or for guidance in a certain area, be prepared, because if we don't get it in meditation or in a dream, it's going to come through someone else who's going to just make our hair stand up straight, because it's going to be the answer that we've been looking for. So it gets back to this natural process of life and how the whole universe is constructed for our good, for our joy. And that's when we can keep this in mind and live this way in thought and feeling, then everything opens up for us.
And that be the truth. John, tell people about the World Healing Day and how they can participate and how they can reach you.
Well, the first World Healing Day began on December the 31st of 1986. When I was coming back, Jan and I were coming back from doing a workshop in Alabama. We were on the plane, and I heard the words, "It is time for world service." I had no idea what that meant. And over the next month, I began to receive bits and pieces of information telling me that 1987 was going to be a critical year for this planet, and that we must do whatever we can to reach out to people and bring them together at one moment in time and with a special meditation. And it turned out that it was December the 31st. We selected noon Greenwich time because it was the same time all around the world, within the same time zone all around the world. And that's 4 o'clock in California, and in Central it's 7 o'clock, and then 8 o'clock on the East Coast. And what it really is to bring people together to think peace, to think and feel love, and devote an hour to being in tune with the Source and letting that energy of love and joy and peace and forgiveness to flow forth into the collective consciousness, to break up these hardened strata that this collective thought forms that have been holding this world back. And from our computer estimates back then, over 500 million people came together for that first World Healing Day in 1986. And we saw what happened. You know, the Berlin Wall came down, the Soviet Republic broke apart, everything began to turn from weeds to roses. Now, we couldn't keep it up. We couldn't keep that momentum up. And over the last few years, we have been asking people to let us know what you're going to be doing. The churches are now responding more than they have in a long time. Organizations are getting behind it. And people, you know, in nursing homes, in retirement centers, and on the beaches of Florida and California are doing it. They're coming together in that spirit of love to release that spiritual energy into the collective consciousness. And the next one is coming up next month, the end of the month, December 31st, and we're asking people wherever they are to tune into that source. If they have the World Healing Meditation to work with, that's wonderful. It's been in many of my books, and we're just thinking that the more we have, the greater the influence will be. I wrote an article for the December Cornice Report. People have asked me what I'm thinking, my thoughts have been about the fury of nature. And I found something in ancient wisdom and also from Ralph Waldo Emerson that nature conforms to our thoughts, our feelings, and our consciousness. And it made me realize is that the things, the floods, the hurricanes, the fires, the things that have been going on all over the world is because we have moved into both an aggressive consciousness and a victim consciousness. And we have not been true to ourselves and true to the universal spirit of peace and love and forgiveness. And this has caused an imbalance in nature. And as we come back together again and come into that unified mind link and stay there and release that energy, at least to some extent, I think we can alter and bring back into balance at least a part of nature. And also to help this world to seek peace instead of war, and to understand that we really have no benefits in fighting. The only benefit comes from peace. And we have to do a lot of meditation to understand what that really means, because, you know, there's a lot of hawks and there's a lot of doves. And when we can bring the hawks and doves together in a unified spirit of cooperation and understanding, then we can change this world. And, you know, I may be an idealist, but...
No, John.
That's my feeling.
Yes, well... I don't think we can just partially bring it back into balance. I think we can completely bring it back into balance. And thoughts that are filled with light and intention for peace, and when we come together aligned that way, have 1,000 times more power than the thoughts of darkness.
Oh, yes.
And we've had a lot of those. You know, we've had a lot of those doomsday predictions and stuff. And you know what I say, John? Not on my watch.
I like that.
Not on my watch. I will be responsible for that. We've had enough of that doom and gloom and destruction. And I think things can be done in a peaceful way, in a loving way, in a gentle way. And one of the things I do is everything that I see that I don't think is God's perfection, that isn't a happy thing, that involves some kind of suffering,
mm-hmm.
and whether it's for a person, an animal, a condition, a country, I have something that I say, a decree that came to me in meditation, and it is, through the presence that I am, everything I touch and become aware of is charged with the violet transmuting flame and transmutes itself into an asset for the benefit, happiness, and upliftment of all life, everywhere, forever. And so it is.
Oh, I love that, Iris. That's beautiful.
That pretty well covers it, doesn't
that
it?
That covers it. Yes, it does. And I like not on my watch. That's good.
Yeah, not on my watch.
Right, right. Oh, you're a bright light for our time, darling.
What?
You are a very bright light for our time.
Thank you, John, and likewise, my darling. And so I want to invite people to join World Healing Day to let other people know. And you know, I don't subscribe to this global warming thing either. It's like we're here for global cooling, global healing, and global greening.
Oh, how beautiful.
That's what we're here for. You know, I put all my thoughts, my words, my activities towards that. And I know you do, too. And I want people to be able to reach you, John. So tell them how they can reach you.
Well, our website is quartus.org.
QUARTUS.org.
And we have information there about the activities that are going on, what we're doing, where we're going to be, everything, a list of all the books that, you know, we've written, and the things that are coming up. People want to subscribe to the Quartus Report, the information is there. We put out a monthly report about what's going on and with articles that hopefully uplift people and get them into a higher frequency of consciousness. And by the letters that we receive and the emails, my goodness, it's happening. So that's our creative expression.
It certainly is, and I thank you for being so diligent about it for years and years and years and years. You and Jan are just so precious, and you know, it's funny, all the way along my path, I've always been aware of what you and Jan were doing.
Oh, goodness.
I can't explain it more than that, because we're on the same team. You know, and I've just been so thankful for you always, and read your books as they came out, and applied them, and used them, and gained a lot of mastery in my life. I can truly say I am a master in regard to money.
Yes, you are.
I am, John, and I want to say that one of the important building blocks for me was the Abundance book. And, you know, I don't have a copy now. I must have given away 500 copies of that book. And the way I can tell a great book is that I don't have a copy now because I gave away my last one.
Okay. Oh.
So I want to make this offer that anyone that would like a copy of John's Abundance book, I will send the first 10 people that email me a copy of the Abundance book as a glad free gift of love, for giving thanks for all that you've given in my process and in the lives of so many others. So,
thank you, Doris. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John, and thank you, Jan, and thank you, God, for you guys. And My email address is miracleshp, M-I-R-A-C-L-E-S-H-P, at yahoo.com, and that's a free copy of the Abundance book to the first 10 people that emailed me. And I want to thank you so much for being with us. God bless you, John. I hope you'll come back.
And whenever you call.
No, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you for being with us. And we'll be back Monday at 2 o'clock with the beloved, beautiful, precious, dear Sharon Callahan, animal communicator extraordinaire. Until then, happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep shining until then. Happy trails to you till we meet again. God bless you. And this is my wish for you, that all your dreams come true and are 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible. Amen. Amen. And yee-haw.